Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn. Episode 954, No Half Measures. We'll definitely flush that title out over the course of this episode of this podcast. We are recording this kind of a little bit late, but I wanted to get this podcast out to you before, you know, while things were still popping with some of the news that's going on in the past couple of days, especially in the world of hip hop and college basketball. We're going to begin with hip hop. That's how, you know, that's how important, even in a week where, you know, the NBA, college basketball and the NBA are taking full circle, full stride is that we head towards the postseason, in the NBA, and we just, you know, wrapped up the Final Four. Hip hop is, you know, right there right now. Hip hop is up top of the list as far as what I wanted to talk about here, and we're gonna do a deep dive of the J. Cole apology to Kendrick Lamar. Now, a lot happened over the past couple of weeks. So you have Kendrick, we talked about this on the podcast a couple of weeks back. You have Kendrick, had Kendrick come at J. Cole and also Drake, mostly at Drake. You have J. Cole then last Friday come out with a 7-minute drill where he comes at Kendrick. And basically told the, you know, said a bunch of stuff that just wasn't true in regards to Kendrick's work and him falling off like the Simpsons, and, you know, he's in his prime, Kendrick is not in his prime, and, you know, stuff that said things about Kendrick that have been said before. We people that come at Kendrick, you can't lyrically come at him, so you'll just talk about the fact that he doesn't release an album every 6 months or things of that nature, like. Because you can't say anything about him lyrically as an artist. So you have to, like, almost make up stuff in a way. And that's what J. Cole did. To me, it was a rushed work. It wasn't quality. And it came off, I thought it was like, you know, it was average at best, if not even less than that. Now, again, the Cole fans will tell you, no, yeah, all this stuff is true, and it's not. Like, you know, To Pimp a Butterfly was like one of the best albums, along with My Dark Twisted Fantasy, of the decade of the 2010s. Like, it just was. But, like, that's what it was. But we're not, you know, we're not going to relitigate Kendrick's career. We know what Kendrick was and is as an artist, as an artist and rapper. This is about, so Cole comes out after that and then publicly apologizes at his own event, Dreamville, over this past weekend in North Carolina. I'm not gonna go through every single thing he said. I'm just gonna give you the basic quotes. The past 2 days felt terrible. It let me know how good I've been sleeping for the past 10 years. Comes out along with that. He says, basically, you know, who don't know that we all know that Kendrick is one of the greatest. You know, I'm paraphrasing, you know, something that was bothering me in my spirit about this. And it was rough to listen to. I'll be honest with you. When I first heard this, like a lot of people who have been lifelong fans of hip hop, was kind of pissed off about it. In a sense of, this is not how it's supposed to go when it comes to battling. Especially when you've called yourself Muhammad Ali, especially when you've acknowledged yourself, put yourself in this class of the big three, along with Drake and Kendrick Lamar. But you know, as I thought about it more, this actually was a good thing for hip hop, and it actually provided clarity. Like I said this last week, a couple weeks ago, there's never been a big three. Let's get that clear. never been a big three. And to add further clarification to that and to J. Cole, there's J. Cole is just not, it's not a GOAT. Sorry, he's not. I can't. You can't be considered one of the GOATs if you don't believe that you're one of the GOATs. And you say, well, how can you say that he doesn't believe he's one of the GOATs? If you're in the fight, then fight. Like if you're in the fight, then fight. Like this is probably this the worst thing he probably could have done was probably would have said, yo, Kendrick, you got it. I'm not even trying to bow you. You got it. You the man. This probably was the second worst thing to come out with a track and then to, no pun intended, to retract that and walk it back. I've never seen, like I said, this, you can't compare this to Super Ugly. And we think about, you know, we're thinking about a last time a rapper apologized over the course of a battle rap. You got to go back, you know, go back to Jay-Z, Nas. Jay-Z drops Takeover, Nas drops Ether, then Jay-Z comes out with Super Ugly, and then he didn't even apologize, by the way. He that was more like, you know, it went too far. And the only reason he said that was because his mom checked him, which was it was and the track was hard, it was horrible. It was a horrible track at that. That was it's was a horrible track, and his mom checked him. That's the only reason like Jay like even semi-apologized or even walked that back. And that was understandable. Your mom checked, it's still your mom. I don't care who you are. But when you're in the fight, then you're either in or you're out. And you can't consider yourself one of the GOATs. Like I said, Kendrick, if J. Cole, pure and simple, just didn't want to smoke with Kendrick Lamar. He didn't want it. He did. I mean, he just did not want it. And again, I think it's one of the situations where you don't believe that you are on that level if you are not willing to go tit for tat, toe to toe, and actually battle this thing out. You just don't believe it. Like I grew up watching Allen Iverson play basketball. I saw Allen Iverson, in high school. Okay, as like a 15, 16-year-old, basically single-handedly beat in an AAU tournament, beat Jerry Stackhouse and Jeff McGinnis. At the time, Jerry Stackhouse was a top five player in high school basketball. Jeff McGinnis was a McDonald's All-American. They both ended up being McDonald's All-Americans. And I didn't even know who else was on Allen Iverson's team. And Allen Iverson won the game. And Allen Iverson gets to the NBA and there was not one year or during his career where you thought that he was the best player in the world. He never was the best player in the world. You know, Duncan, Kobe, Shaq, Jordan, those guys ran the league while Iverson was there in the latter part of his career. Of course, you had LeBron. But here's the point. Allen Iverson always thought that he was the best player on the floor, no matter what you and I thought. He always thought he was the best player on the floor. I've seen Allen Iverson say, the 6 years I've been in the league, I've been in the league 6 years. I've been the MVP all 6 years in my eyes. Was it true? He was the MVP, you know, in 2001. He came in 96. So he was the MVP one of those years. But he believed that. And you believe that he believed that based on how he played, how he competed. That was the thing I respected the most about Iverson. It wasn't just athleticism, his toughness. There was a lot to like about Iverson as far as how he played and how he competed. But the thing I respected the most was the confidence he had in himself despite being undersized. Okay. That was the thing. It goes beyond heart, to be honest with you. There was a self-belief that forced you to believe in the type of player that he was. And he always carried that until he just couldn't physically do it anymore, until he refused to go to the bench, which is another story. But until it was over, like he always had that. You never he There was never any doubt. If you want to be considered one of the GOATs, call yourself Muhammad Ali. There can be no doubt. There can't be any doubt at all in your belief in yourself. And J. Cole, during this situation, showed doubt. He showed doubt. And you can't, in the game of hip hop, when you're competing with at the stakes, you got to remember this, you have legacies on the line. You have legacies on the line here. When you get in this game, when it comes to a lyrical battle, a lyrical war, all bets are off. All bets are off, and then you're either in it or you're out. That's it. So to me, this provides the necessary clarity that this is a two-man battle. This is Drake, this is Kendrick, it's Drake. It's just that simple. That's it. It's Kendrick and Drake. And there never was a big three, number one, never was a big three. And also, I can't consider Drake, not Drake, excuse me. I can't consider no longer consider Ken, J. Cole one. You can't call him a GOAT. I mean, number one, he's never released a classic album. That's number one. And I'll get to that part. And number two, he backed out of a battle. He backed out of a battle. I don't get it. I'm still confused by it right now. I'm confused, but I'm not confused. So I think that again, you're a J. Cole fan, you might not like this, but it is what it is. He backed out. He didn't want to smoke. Now, it's been a very interesting thing in hip hop, in regards to how we view albums versus singles. J. Cole last year, 2023, was named best rapper alive by Complex. I'm not the biggest fan of Complex, but for the most part, they've given the best rapper alive since going back to 1979. They went back and they did it. I mean, it hasn't been around. Complex hasn't been around that long, but they did go back and list the best rappers alive going back to 1979. And I would say for the most part, they've been on point, or have been on point. But they gave it to J. Cole last year because he, without dropping an album, he wins best rapper alive without dropping the album because he was featured on 13 different songs. And the claim was that he, destroyed those songs, or a lot of people think, he out-rapped or outperformed, Lil Durk or Drake on various tracks and what have you. And there was somewhere in hip hop, there has been a shift of putting more importance on features and individual tracks than actually coming out with complete albums. That was one of J. Cole's criticisms of Kendrick. Like, you didn't did four albums in 12 years. Yeah, but none of those albums have missed. Kendrick has not struck out once. All his albums haven't been home runs, but he got about four home runs, two doubles, and a triple. I'll tell you that. He's batting 1,000. And, a lot of these artists, again, Drake has been the master of this, has been the master of the individual hit. He's been the master of that. And somewhere along the line became more important to produce great features, to be on a feature or produce a great individual song versus producing a top tier album. And I think, and that is the biggest, that's what separates Kendrick from J. Cole and Drake. That's what clearly separates him. There's a clear separation when it comes to those three, when you look at the body of work as far as albums goes. But getting back to the J. Cole response, again, I honestly don't understand. I honestly don't know you know, he'll continue to rap, of course. He's not going, this is not, this doesn't end his career, but I'll be very curious to see where he goes from here artistically, what this does to him. Yeah, because he's absolutely going to get destroyed by the culture behind this. He's already getting destroyed. Yeah, like he's going to get, and again, he already showed that he gives a shit about what you and I and the culture feels about him. And he basically said it during the concert that he kind of was sort of some peer pressure about responding back to responding to Kendrick. But this is hip hop, man. This is hip hop at its purest when it comes to these battles. And again, you like. You're in the fight or you're not. Slim Charles on season 3 of The Wire, the middle not the middle ground episode, the season finale, the episode I haven't got the name of the episode, but it was the season finale where Avon gets arrested. Beginning of the episode, this is coming off the Stringer being killed. Basically Avon says, you know, Stringer died because, you know, some stuff that was basically out of his control. And Slim Charles and Avon was seemingly wanted to back out the war with Marlo, and Slim Charles is basically like, if we in war, if it is a lie, then we fight on that lie. But we gotta fight. Like once you're at war, you in it. That's it. Like there's no walking it back. And this is hip hop war when it comes to these battles. You have legacies that are on the line. And you absolutely can't call yourself one of the best, a GOAT, or one of the best, or Muhammad Ali, if you're not real willing to, or if you're not willing to throw down when somebody knocks on your door. Kendrick knocked on J. Cole and Drake's door. Now we'll see what happens with Drake. And honestly, Drake is playing it smart right now. You can't rush these things. You like this is something you can't rush. I don't think people realize. Like it took Nas 3 months to respond to Jay-Z in 2001. 3 months. 3 months. You know what, like. When you're playing at this, when you're at this level, is you can't rush a track. You can't. I don't care what the internet says. I don't care what social media says. No, this is like, again, these three are considered to be at the top of the game over the last decade or so, decade plus. So what is said or what is not said will in a lot of ways determine their legacies moving forward. And that's just the way it is. But again, I'm not as, I actually think that this is actually a good thing for hip hop, that it just moves it. We don't ever have to hear none of that Big Three shit anymore. Like that's dead. That's gone. I don't have to hear about that no more. I refuse to even entertain it. I don't even entertain that conversation. I refuse to even entertain that conversation. You talking to me about any Big Three? We talking about Big Three in basketball? Are we talking about Big Three in sports? We're not talking about Big Three in hip hop. There's no Big Three in hip hop. There's not. It's not. Now, you know, Drake. What Drake has, he has the people. He has the popularity. He has the streams. He has, you know, he's on his way to becoming a billionaire. He has that going for him. Kendrick has the critical acclaim, the Grammys, the albums. So Drake, J. Cole doesn't have neither one of those, to be honest with you. So this was actually J. Cole's entry into that level. This was it, because he doesn't have he's not the most popular, doesn't have sell the most albums, and he definitely doesn't have the body of work as far as re-listenable albums or a classic album or a definitive album. He does not have that. This was J. Cole's entry into that conversation in a real way, not something that was manufactured by himself, by coining the big three. And he blew it. He absolutely dropped the ball. And there's no recovering from this. Like when you, there's no recovering from this in terms of being from a standpoint of GOAT status. There's not like you can't objectively, because I'm not even talking about y'all J. Cole fanatics. You can't objectively call J. Cole a GOAT or one of the best or one of the all time greats after this. You just can't, because he doesn't believe that he's one of the all time greats. Pure and simple. Couple new dynasties in the world of college basketball, of course, last night, or now, Monday night, last night, because we were late on Tuesday. Last night, of course, we saw UConn pull off the repeat, taking out Purdue relatively handily, 75-60. They ran away in the second half after only being up by six in the first half. UConn, first repeat champion since Florida, 06-07. This last 2 years, they have been as dominant. This is the most dominant run I've seen of a college basketball team in a 2 year stretch. You have to go back previously, I think, I would say, UNLV had a 90-91 stretch. They won a championship in 90-91. They're undefeated, but they lost to Duke in the national semifinal. Kentucky had a stretch where 3 years they played in three straight national championships from 96-98. That 96 team, of course, one of the most dominant great teams in college basketball history. They get to the national semi. They get to the national championship and lose in overtime to Arizona without Derek Anderson, who was their second best player. So that easily could have been three straight, but this run right here, you're talking about with UConn, not only so much with the win-loss record, which with the point differential in the tournament, you just don't see it. Like you don't, winning by 13 points in 12 straight tournament games is just something that you just don't see. Like their closest tournament game, well, not 12 straight tournament, but 11 out of 12 tournament games. The only game, 12 games, 12 tournament games. Their closest, their closest, the team that got closest to it was Miami last year in the Final Four, which was, 72-59. They are the number one program in college basketball. It's pure and simple. They are the number one program in college basketball. There was a point, there was a point, I want to say in 2004, where it was Duke and UConn. After they won their second championship, I thought that they were number two behind UConn, behind Duke. Then North Carolina kind of reemerged. UConn kind of slipped a little bit. And then they, did win a championship for about six, 7 years. They go 2011, 2014. Okay. Impressive, of course. Calhoun was last championship in 2011, then Kevin Ollie in 2014. Certainly a question. Certainly, in the conversation for team of the decade of the 2010s. But even after that, there was slippage. We know what happened with Kevin Ollie. And you fast forward now to 2023, Dan Hurt, the 2023, and they are again. They are the program in college basketball right now. Hurley, and think about that's so impressive about this particular team. They, the size of the team, they have they have guards that are 6'5", Klingon 7'2", Carabran 6'8". Like physicality, like they play. They looked, playing Purdue outside of Edie, they looked like it would look like a varsity versus the JV physically. Physically, they just overwhelm teams. And listen, you say what you want. You can call him arrogant. You call him cocky. He talks his shit and he backs it up. Dan Hurley, back-to-back championships. He told everybody in 2020, you better get us now. He's very good. I distinctly remember that press conference. For whatever reason, I remember that in real time. You better get us now. We're coming. Don't, again, I haven't seen too many coaches say that. I haven't seen too many coaches in my lifetime talk, even talk like that before they win a championship. Normally afterwards, you'll hear a little talk. But if even most, for the most part, you don't even hear coaches talk like that in general. I mean, that was some like Deion Sanders type shit. Like, yo, you better get this right now. But they more than back it up with the with back-to-back championships. And they are the number one program in college basketball. I think there's no two ways about it. They are the it program. Six championships in 25 years. It's just like they, again, it took North Carolina, it took 60 years. North Carolina took basically 60 years to get six championships. So North Carolina's first championship was in 57. Their last championship was in 2017. Just to put it in perspective, they tied North Carolina last night with their sixth championship in 25 years, just to put it in perspective. So that's how dominant and that's how fast this has happened. Even with that said, even with a back-to-back national championship, a back-to-back champion national championship, a new dynasty in the men's game, it still paled in comparison to what we saw in terms of popularity, in terms of the juice of the women's Final Four. You have a game, South Carolina wins their second championship in 3 years. We'll talk more about Dawn Staley over the course of the program. But South Carolina gets their third championship, second in 3 years. The game is the highest rated college basketball game in 5 years. Women's college basketball, if I, I have a segment won the week. They won March, period. They won the tournament. They were the biggest winners of college basketball this postseason, without question. The excitement, what this possibly could mean, not only for the future college basketball in terms of women, but the WNBA. Because the problem is in terms of the men, with the transfer portal and with the one and done, you're not getting, Connecticut, even with back-to-back championships, Connecticut couldn't save men's college basketball this season. And the tournament, frankly, was bad. The average margin of victory in the tournament was 14, was 14 points, which was the highest it had been in years. Like, you would think, I thought that this, Connecticut was the favorite, but outside of Connecticut, it was pretty much, I thought it was going to be a wide open tournament. And it turned out just to be not a very well played tournament, to be perfectly honest with you. So this was all about the women. And in that South Carolina game, you saw Caitlin Clark kind of get a taste of what the WNBA is somewhat is going to look like. She had to get a hard 30. It was a hard 30. They were on her ass, physically. I thought they wore down Iowa with with their defense, and with I'm basically having players two starting five. So it came down great player versus great team. You're gonna more times than not, the great team is going to win. Period. I don't want to hear. And I heard this. First of all, Caitlin Clark doesn't need any apologists. So I don't want to hear about her resume is complete. No, it's not. She didn't win a championship. The resume is not complete. It's not. If like Caitlin Clark is a great player, but again, we're gonna put her the Mount Rushmore, the all-time greats amongst the greats. All those, there's not, I dare anybody in the audience, please give me the all-time great college basketball, women's college basketball player that did not win a championship. Please, please. All-time great. Yeah, no, Dawn Staley was very complimentary, one of the GOATs. Yes, did she elevate the game with the in terms of the interest with playing shooting Steph Curry like 3-point shots and her going to back-to-back Final Fours? Sure. And I'm not denying her impact on the game, but I'm sorry, I'm always gonna put winning first, always. before stats, before notoriety, before style, before anything, winning always goes, it comes first in my mind. She did not win a championship. Swoops, again, Cheryl Miller, Taurasi, all Maya Moore, go across the board. Breonna Stewart, Holzclaw, Candace Parker, any all-time great player that's an all-time great. Forget about going past Mount, even more, you're going past Mount Rushmore. They won at least one championship, if not multiple. Okay. Brittany Griner. So, she does not need to be apologized for. Like, can't make excuses. And again, I'm not saying she's not a great player. I'm just not going to put her on the level of those other players when she didn't get the chip. Period. That's how greatness is judged in sports, when you get to that level and you are called one of the GOATs, you're called one of the greatest college basketball players of all time. How can I really say that you're one of the greatest college basketball players of all time and you did not win a championship and you stayed? Like, it's not like she was one and done or two and done. She, like, part of the class of 2020, played her entire career and didn't win a championship. What else is there to be said? And that's not a knock on her. To say her resume is not complete, it's not a knock on her. It's a fact. She didn't win a championship. It's just that simple. And again, I thought South Carolina was a better team, but, you know, they beat them. They beat South Carolina last year. So let's not say South Carolina was this, they were, you know, I know South Carolina goes undefeated this year, but they beat them last year. Okay. They beat them last year. Again, not a knock against Caitlin Clark at all. I think she's going to be, with her skill set, I'd be shocked if she wasn't an all-star in the WNBA. She's going to get buckets. She's going to score, period. So I think we gotta hold off on putting her at this level to where, like, she's not Wembanyama. Like, I feel I feel again, I'm not trying to turn this to a man woman thing, not by any stretch of imagination, but I'm just talking about how I feel about her moving forward with the potential of what she's going to do to the league. I don't think that she is going to have that same type of impact as well as it went Wembanyama, as far as, hey, this is a player that I've never seen before. And I know, like, that dude is going to be a championship player. I can't say that Caitlin Clark is going to be a championship player. Like, I can't just, you know what, without question, she will win the WNBA championship. I don't know. I don't know. Again, look at the history of women's college basketball. I dare anybody to give me the all-time great college basketball player, women's college basketball player that did not win a championship. So UConn, South Carolina, to me, cement their dynasties. Again, we'll talk more about Dawn Staley. There was a constant theme between the two championship teams, and it was sides. You see, Klingland, Cardoza, that side, that interior, that size in the paint still matters in a real way. Despite all with the guards and the wing positions and the wing players that are dominating the NBA, you like 7'2", 7'3", and 6'8" in the women's game, or 6'7", Cardoza is, that matters. Like, they were playing, you know, the South Carolina game, they destroyed Iowa on the boards. Iowa was too small. Purdue was too small for UConn across the board. Because Edie outplays Klingland for the most part. Edie had, 37-10? But the rest of Purdue, you know, first of all, the game plan was perfect. But the rest of Purdue, the rest of the players were just too small for UConn. Yeah, I mean, you again, you kind of look like an NBA team versus Purdue. They really did. They had size at every position. At every position. And can we not, hey, a couple things before we move on. Can we not compare like UConn to Duke and Florida? This era is completely different. The game is a completely different era of basketball. Do you know how long ago that was when Florida won those championships? You're talking about 2006. That's 16 years ago. That is eternity in college basketball. That's a generation ago. It was an entire generation ago. The Duke was almost more than 30 years ago. Like Christian Laettner's, Grant Hill's, those guys wouldn't even be in college right now. Can't compare those teams to this current UConn team. It's no comparison. It's not even a legitimate comparison. I would say Duke was more. Excuse me, UConn's runs were more impressive in terms of domination. That's not, we can't compare. We can't argue that. But to be completely fair about it, the different eras can't like even comparing 06 to 2022, 2024 to 07. That's a 17-year difference. That was literally. Literally, that was not last decade. It was a decade before last. That's the 2000s. We're in the 2020s now. And as regards to Zach Edey, a lot of discourse on him about what type of pro prospect that he has a chance to be. Couple of things. Number one, I was very impressed by him. More impressed than I was. He's come a long way. Even like watching him from last year. Remember, Purdue got eliminated in the first round of the tournament last year. I'm not listening. He will go in the first round without question. In this draft, he might go in the lottery because this draft is going to be one of these drafts that you're going to be looking back and saying that the best player in the draft probably was drafted outside the lottery. Has one of those type draft. It feels like one of those types of drafts, to be honest with you. But let's not pretend like this dude can't develop and get better at the next level. Like he's completely just topped out, maxed out his skill set or his potential. I don't believe that whatsoever at all. He first of all, he just started playing basketball, what, in high school? Hasn't even been playing that long, number one. Two, he doesn't like. He doesn't I don't want to see him put the ball on the floor. I don't need to see him shooting jump shots or threes or what have you. A couple post moves, maybe a 15 footer, and he'll be good. Like he will be good. I don't think he'll ever be an all NBA, all-star type player, but he should have a long career in the NBA. He could be a above average backup center in the NBA for a long time. I get his skills don't translate as far as the small ball and foot speed and things of that nature, but he's still 7'3". Like he's still 7'3" with skill. With skill. So again, we pretend like just because he stayed in college that he can't develop. In the pros, like he can get better and develop and still like and add things to his games, to his game. Going around the NBA, so as we go about 12 days, 11 days in the NBA, the play-in tournament starts a week from Monday. Still a lot to be determined with the standings and seeding. The race for number one in the West is wide open. Even number two in the East. It's still open. Milwaukee won tonight. Hopefully Giannis is okay. He had to leave the game with a calf injury. I looked around, I thought to myself, like, how many teams realistically, as we stand here approaching April 10th, how many teams can actually win the championship? I'm gonna be honest with you, I only came up with three. You got the Celtics. I have the Celtics, the Nuggets, and you're gonna be surprised by a third one, the Timberwolves. Yeah, I take the Timberwolves over the Bucks, the Timberwolves over Phoenix, over the Lakers, over the Heat. I don't expect another miracle run by the Heat again this year. I just don't. I think there are legitimately only three teams that can win it, that can win the championship this year. I'm not a buyer of the Clippers. Again, you want to call it like I had to see it to believe it. I'm sorry. And I definitely don't buy the Phoenix Suns. You know, I've been down them. I mean, we've been down. Me, you know, when Rob Sapp, we talked about them when that trade was first made last year. Nah. I've gotten, there's nothing I've seen this year that would have me thinking that the Phoenix Suns can go out, can win three playoff series, four playoff series, maybe not even one, to be honest with you. You know, Denver and Boston are kind of obvious. What I see in Minnesota, I've been so impressed with how they've handled it, so many injuries, and had 51 the last time I checked tonight. They handle their injuries. They defend. They have size at all positions: the wings, interior. They're gonna get Karl-Anthony Towns back in the playoffs, and this is a fearless team. Anthony Edwards is fearless. Now again, you can knock them offensively. You can knock them for, you know, late game execution. That's a hump that they're gonna have to get over. But as far as teams that match up, I'm looking at matchups. They match up with both Boston and Denver, to be honest with you, with their size. They match up with both those teams. If you look at how their team is constructed, those wings can flat out defend at a high level. And they should be given a lot of credit how they've navigated not having, you know, in essence, their second best offensive player for an extended period of time. And it's not like Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is going to make an All-NBA team, but it's not like he's out there dropping 40 every night, and they've asked him to do more than what they normally expected because they haven't. They have a lot of balance on that team and a lot of toughness. So I think, again, there are three teams. I'm sorry, the Milwaukee, even despite what happened tonight, I'm not buying. I can't do it with Milwaukee. I just can't. I don't trust them. And I basically give them a better chance of beating the Celtics than I even do than I do of getting to the Celtics. I don't think they're going to get to the Celtics. I actually would give them a chance against the Celtics, as crazy as it might sound, but because I'm not a believer in Mazzulla, to be perfectly honest with you. And we know how the Celtics, in you know, with some of the late game shot selection and close games, and you know how they could be suspect in close games. I just don't trust that Milwaukee to even get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, every loss they have or every bad loss they have, Doc has another excuse. And I don't understand. This is where I don't understand if Doc gets this of how that kind of like that kind of mindset and those words, you know, get filtered within the culture of a team in a locker room. Like that really has an effect on your team when your coach is kind of, when your coach doesn't really take accountability and kind of passes the buck, which Doc did in Philadelphia. Doc has done everywhere he went, everywhere he's gone, more so in Philadelphia and now in Milwaukee. Like it's never Doc's fault. It's never Doc's fault. Never. Like, so I don't trust Milwaukee. I think I said right now there are three teams that can win it. Three teams, that's it. Who won the week? Could have went a couple of ways, but Dawn Staley, third national championship. She joins a select company of, you know, Oriyama Summit. The recently now retired Tara Vanderveer, who just literally retired within the last hour or so. And of course, Kim Mulkey. Mulkey has four, Vanderveer has three championships, Summit has eight, and of course, Geno has 11. So, rare company for her. Just at the top of the sport right now, she conquered the bear as far as she has pushed Connecticut. Oh, push Connecticut away. She loses an entire starting five from last year, and amazingly replaces it, and they win a championship. Last three seasons, she's 109-3 with two national championships. in a final four to poop. So final four in all three of those seasons. Last year, they lose to Iowa. You know, they've had back to back undefeated regular seasons. They lost to Iowa last year in the final four, national semifinal. So they have a machine. They're going to be back. They have to be preseason number one next year. They're losing Cardoza, but that freshman class they have that they have right now. I'm sure they she has. I'm sure. No, she has recruits coming in, and she's still relatively young. She can win. I mean, she can basically win as many titles as she wants to. The question would be, will she choose to go to the WNBA or we saw, Charlotte is interviewing a lady coach. Is the NBA a possibility for Dawn Staley? Is that on the table? So we'll see what happens in regards to that. But Dawn Staley wins the week and has put herself in rarefied air as far as college basketball coaches, especially on the women's side and men's side as well. It's not too many men's coaches that have three championships. That is the ultimate separator. That third, when you get that third one, you're talking, John Wooden, Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, Jim Calhoun, Bob Knight, Adolph Rupp. That there's not that many coaches that have more than two. That have more than two, let alone three, on both sides, men or women's, for that matter. A couple of real thoughts before I let you go. John Calipari, excuse me, is out as a Kentucky coach. He resigned. He will be the next coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. I want to be frank with you. I want to be completely honest with y'all Kentucky fans. Y'all can't have it both ways. Like, you wanted him out. You complained about him. You bitched and moaned about him. Cool. I've never been the biggest Calipari fan, especially as a Kentucky coach. I think he has wasted a number of talent and has had far too much talent to only have one championship. But we gotta be honest. I gotta be honest with you. You can't sit up here and shit on him as he is underachieving and then complain even when he leaves, calling him stuff, calling him a snake. He bailed out. I'm like, which is it? You said you wanted him out. He left. He did you a favor in essence. And let's not pretend like the program was in the greatest shape before he got there. Like, Billy, you we remember Billy Gillespie, what those years look like. I think I what happened to Calipari at Kentucky was this to me. I think he got too enamored with the one and done. He kind of was ahead of the curve a little bit with that and took it to a level that had never been before, that they had never seen before with the one and done. The problem is, number one, look, there was one year that changed it all, changed everything, and that was that 2015 year. If you remember that year, that team was loaded with talent. They had Devin Booker. You have Devin Booker, Karl-Anthony Towns, Willie Cauley-Stein. They had pros up and down the board. They go 38-1. The Harrison Twins. They lose to Wisconsin. They had two starting fives in essence. They had two starting fives. They had no business. Trey Lyles, another excellent player. They had no business losing. They had no business losing that season. And they never recovered from that to me. They never went to another Final Four. They never really were championship contenders after that. They got to, so what happened was he started losing. Even though he was getting McDonald's and All-Americans well after that, if you look at the quality of the talent that he got in the beginning, it does not compare. At the end, it doesn't compare to the talent that he got that was coming in there now in the last couple of years. So he comes along in 2009, 2010 season. That's his first season. He gets John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Brendan Knight, okay, Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, again, the Harrison twins, Julius Randle, Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, Bam Adebayo, De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk. Okay, that's up into 2016. After that, yeah, you're still getting all Americans, but Kevin Knox, Jared Vanderbilt, PJ Washington, Keldon Johnson, Immanuel Quickley, Tyrese Maxey, Terrence Clark, Collins, now the group he has now that came into it, or last year, not nowhere in nowhere near the amount of talent that or at the level of the talent that he was early in his career. Once that talent slipped, that was it. Because he wasn't building a core group that can go out there and win at a high and win national championships. Like those guys, even having the most talent, even with all making those All-Americans, even when he had the great premium talent, those teams struggled in big games with the pressure on. Period. I just gave you hint, 2015, even with overwhelming talent. They had overwhelming talent that year. So when that talent slipped, that was it. Because Calipari is not a, again, Calipari is not a X's and O's guy. He's not. Like he's more like the along the lines of somebody who's going to get the best pieces and roll them out there and let the chips fall where they may be. Period. But again, you Kentucky fans can't have it both ways. You want him out, he's out. That's it. He's out. And Kentucky is still a top two job. I know the fan base can be crazy. Their expectations are, out of this world, but this is still Kentucky. It's still a legit top two job in America. And he, by the way, Calipari will win at Arkansas. I'm not saying he will win a national championship, but he will have Arkansas. Arkansas, he'll get recruits, and Arkansas has had some talented teams over the last couple 4 or 5 years. They got into a couple of elite eights. It's not like he's taking over a reclamation project like he was at UMass. So that he will, I think, immediately win at Arkansas. Something to prove, not as much, not nowhere near the pressure. He'll win at Arkansas. So Bryan James, after declaring to go to the after entering the transfer portal, leaving USC after one season, has now decided to take that to another level and enter his name in the 2024 NBA draft. He still has college eligibility, and despite having Rich Paul, who's of course his father's agent, as an agent as well, works for Clutch Sport, retains all his eligibility, has a choice to remove his name from the draft and go back to college. So here's a question. It's not even a question of whether if he, first of all, he's going to keep, he like you don't go this far and not keep it. You don't declare for the draft and not keep your name in the draft if you're Bryan James. I just don't see it happen, to be honest with you. I don't see that happening. I think that he is going to enter the draft. Now, I don't see him playing college basketball next year. I'll be shocked. So it's not a question of whether or not he's going to get drafted. He's going to get drafted. He's going to get drafted. There's going to be a team that feels like they can lure LeBron James if they draft Bryan James. Or hell, it might be the Los Angeles Lakers who draft Bryan James with a second round pick. There'll be teams that will take a flyer on him as a late first round pick, believe it or not. I promise you. All it takes is one dummy. That's all it takes is one. The question to me is, you're LeBron James, right? And I think this tells me that look, next year is going to be LeBron James's last year, to be perfectly honest with you. Be perfectly honest with you. I think this is going to be next year is going to be LeBron James's last year. But if you're LeBron James, I mean, what's more important, Bronny James's development or the fact that, or the idea of you playing with Bronny James, with LeBron James Jr.? Because you can't tell, he's not a pro right now. As we speak, as we stand here on April 10th, 2024, Bronny James is not a pro basketball player. He's not a pro. If he and it, he wouldn't, we wouldn't, if he wasn't LeBron James' son, we wouldn't even be having a conversation for a guy who averaged 5.8 points a game and was on a bad USC team. We wouldn't be having even remotely having this conversation about this player. And by the way, I'm giving him grace from the standpoint he had a cardiac arrest last summer. So I'm not saying that he could not take a jump from this year as a freshman to next year as a sophomore and improve, you know, confidence, physically, conditioning, everything. Just have a good, he can, would it surprise me if LeBron James went back to college next year and averaged 20 points a game and was a star, and would that surprise me? No, it actually would not surprise me. I would say, okay, he went the whole summer working on basketball. He wasn't mentally or physically recovering from, you know, a heart attack in that sense. We're talking about what is his best interest as far as his development long term. I'm sure, like, LeBron James wants Bronny James to have some type of NBA career that goes past playing with that goes past playing with LeBron James. I'm sure he does. He wants that. But right now, this dude is not, he's not a fresh, he's not a pro. He's not a pro. He's not amongst the 58 best players coming that eligible to be drafted, period, point blank. It's not even in this debate. So it's a very interesting situation. You know, LeBron, you don't get to where LeBron James is at without being ambitious, without, from a business standpoint, taking risks. I mean, it's a risk to come out. It was a risk for him to come out as a, you know, high school, you know, still, I mean, as talented as he was, still, you're coming out of high school directly going from pro, high school to pro. So I say that to say all that to say LeBron James has always been a risk taker. This is a risk that, like, you get a sense, again, you get the sense that LeBron James wants this for himself, that he's kind of putting himself here first with this particular situation. You kind of get that sense. Fair. You want to say fair or unfair, but that young man is not a professional basketball player right now. He's not. So we'll see what happens. If I had to guess, you know, Lakers would, you know, with the, you know, Lakers had the, what, the 55th pick in the second round. Like, they're going to roll out the full court press for LeBron James Jr. If you're Genie Buss, they're going to give him one last mega extension. They're going to go all out. They're going to do everything in their power to appease LeBron James. And what more appeasing can you do? If you couldn't be, it couldn't be any more appeasing than drafting his son. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will see you next time. Enjoy the rest of your week.